Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jerry Lucas from March of Dimes, Canada. So tell me a little bit about March of Dimes, Canada.
March of Dimes has been around for almost 70 years. Our name comes from the fact that we were started to fund research to end the threat of polio in the first half of the 20th century. Polio epidemics were a big concern, and around Franklin Roosevelt, who was president of the United States in the 30s and 40s, was a polio survivor, and during his tenure, a Mother's March, which was people going door to door to raise funds, was based on the idea that if everybody gave a dime, we can eliminate the threat of polio. And it was actually accomplished shortly after we were formed in 1954. So for most of our early years were around distributing the polio vaccine and making sure that Canada became polio-free. And then we turned our attention to helping people who were polio survivors to live as independently as possible and get back to their previous life in the community. And over the decades since, we've expanded our services beyond polio survivors to work with all a full range of people with disabilities to help them live independently and to be active participants in the community.
So, how do you go about spreading the word about this work?
That's always, building brand and spreading the word is always difficult. A lot of the response we get, even after all these years, is you do really good work, but we're not sure what you do. And part of that is because we do a lot of different services. We help people to live independently by providing assistance in the home. We help people to get jobs. We help people to acquire and maintain assistive devices like wheelchairs. We help them modify their home and their vehicles if they have a disability that hampers their use. So we do a lot of different things, and it makes it more difficult to get our message out.
So, what are some of the major challenges in things like modifying the home, modifying a vehicle, things of that nature?
I think the biggest challenges are available funding. We manage the Government of Ontario's funds to do home and vehicle modifications in Ontario. And it's actually one of the most generous programs of its type in Canada, but we're only able to meet about 25% of the demand because there are so many people who have both financial need and need home modification. So we provide around $15,000 of assistance to each person we fund, but we could use more money to help others.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with March of Dimes, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
That's a very good question. I think I've been with March of Dimes for many years, so we've been an advocate as well as service provider. So during our tenure, we were involved with getting people with disabilities covered under the Human Rights Code, in helping to get the legislation, the building codes to be improved to include accessibility. And I think we've, you know, I've witnessed over the last 35, 40 years the fact that we've gone from a society that really excluded people with disabilities to providing segregated services, then integrated services, and now there's a real move to seeing people with disabilities as being included in society. And I think that's going to change the way we provide service over the next 15 or 20 years.
So what are the next immediate steps in your work?
I think our big thrust at the moment is we see a real gap in service for people who are stroke and brain injury survivors. There's a lot of resources that are going into helping people survive a stroke and survive a brain injury, and actually the Canadian medical system is incredibly successful in creating stroke survivors and in keeping stroke survivors alive and living for decades afterwards, but there's very little investment in then helping people to make a successful transition back to their home from hospital and then becoming re-engaged in their community. So that's going to be a major thrust of ours over the next 15 or 20 years.
So if you could send any one message to the community about the need for these programs and this increase in services, what would you say?
I would say it's a good investment that, for example, we did a study of the people that have received home modifications 6 years ago, and we found that based on how long it's allowed people to remain in their homes as opposed to going into long-term care and allowed people to be independent, it's costing the taxpayer around $8 a day for the modifications for this group of people, and it would have cost them $160 a day if they had to go into a nursing home or other chronic care. So it's a good upfront investment for the taxpayer as well as good for the people.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Shan Johnson, will be telling us a little bit about the latest in the push to bring more Turner's awareness to Windsor.
So anyways, we're having a supper. We had a supper Friday night at the Kabuto Club, and there was about 30 of us, and it was some women with Turner syndrome, family and friends. And we had raffles. We had a photo booth. And the point of the evening was to give a little bit more information to family and friends about Turner's and to just get together and have more of a social evening and just connect with the family and friends of those of us who have Turner syndrome. So that is certainly one of the things that we are hoping to grow with events such as we had, is that we can connect with each other on a social, personal basis, as much as something to keep educated on, both ourselves and the doctors and the political community, because the political community is where the dollars for the education and the research come to. A good time was had by all.
So why is it you believe the community needs to grow in its understanding of what Turner's is and what it means?
Well, there's certainly, and speaking only for myself, I think a stigma that I believe with having Turner's. And I think parents have to know that there are these issues that come up with growing up with Turner's, as well as the legitimate medical learning issues that grow up, some health issues, heart, hearing. We need to have the parents and the family know that this is a condition that these girls and women do live with very successfully. In all walks of life, we have, just Canada-wide, we certainly have teachers to homemakers to nurses. And I think it's really important that friends and family know this is a condition that can be lived with very successfully.
So, if you could send any one message to the community, just to inform them a little better, what would you say?
If you think that your daughter, your niece, your granddaughter, your student, your patient might have Turner syndrome, I would really advocate strongly getting in touch with the Turner Syndrome Society of Canada. I don't know the website by heart, but perhaps you could blurb that in for me. I think it's Turner Syndrome, or anyways, no, I'm not even going to try. But the Turner Syndrome Society of Canada can steer you in some wonderful directions. If you need support and have questions of people who do have Turner syndrome, you can certainly relay my phone number, which you have. You can relay my phone number, my email, to anybody that calls the station, and I will be more than pleased to chat with them. Talk to your doctors about this. Talk to your teachers, your children's teachers about this. There are some learning adaptations that may have to happen. If the young girl has Turner's, there may be learning adaptations that have to happen as a college-age woman. Certainly there's decisions that have to be made as career and as family life becomes imminent. So I would just say that if you think your daughter, niece, granddaughter, patient, student could have Turner's, basically it's short stature would be your first clue. And if they're, you know, in elementary grade and you think, geez, they're really not growing compared to the other kids, doesn't hurt to talk to the family doctor and say, can we have a test for this? There is nothing that is going to be scary about a diagnosis. And when you get the information about what Turner syndrome is and what the Turner Syndrome Society can do, you will find that it is a condition. There's a reason why it's called a condition, but it doesn't stop people from living full lives.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Since 2009, the Green Bean Cafe has been Windsor's independent cafe, specializing in fair trade, organic, and premium coffee products. Along with our great coffee, we serve other great food and drinks, like tea, fresh baked goods, sandwiches, and more. Visit us on the lower level of 2320 Wyandotte Street, across from the university's engineering building. Follow us on social media at Green Bean Coffee, and get hours and more information at greenbeancoffee.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Jerry Lucas from March of Dimes Canada and Shan Johnson, who gave us an update on the push to bring more Turner's awareness to Windsor. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Melanie Reno from Delta Zeta Sorority here at the university. So tell me a little bit about accessibility and some of the upcoming events Delta Zeta is hosting.
So our actual national philanthropy is the Starkey Hearing Foundation. I'm sure you've had Kira and Victoria probably talk about this before. And basically we support a school in the States, Gallaudet University as well. And they are a deaf school. So a lot of our philanthropy events really help the Starkey Hearing Foundation to raise money for hearing aids for low-income families. We've had girls go to third world countries that are Delta Zetas to help with the foundation as well.
So what inspired Delta Zeta to want to get involved with a hearing impaired and deaf school?
Honestly, it's something that's very common, and it's one of the reasons that I became a Delta Zeta. Is I've had friends growing up that were hearing impaired or deaf, and we encourage learning sign language. We hold sign language events. We'll teach people at the university how to sign, and that promotes accessibility and, you know, the differences in communication that are really important. So
when it comes to things like teaching sign language, are there any challenges, in so much as there may be different dialects, different interpretations?
Yeah, so we teach ASL, just because that's normally what people use in this area. What I have learned from going to Delta Zeta conferences in, like, say, Ohio, there's actually slang that comes with ASL as well. So if you are going to a place that starts with, let's say, like a C, like Chicago or something, you would just take the C and you would jiggle it, and that would be slang for this area. So myself, I'm from Chatham, so I would do the same thing and be like, oh, yeah, I'm from Chatham. But if you go somewhere else where there's another C involved, it can get kind of confusing. So it's kind of cool to learn those little tidbits and stuff. We have our recruitment events coming up, and we promote accessibility there. We have women that sign, and we just wanted to make it comfortable for everybody that's coming through. You know what I mean? Like, with it being our national philanthropy, it does help that we know how to sign, but we definitely encourage coming out. Even if you feel like you might not be able to speak with others if you are hearing impaired or sign, we do have that accessibility there to help.
Well, as an organization here on campus, it speaks well of Delta Zeta to promote accessible, friendly events. It really is thinking outside just the mainstream, the box, and recognizing that every student, everyone has something to contribute. So, in your time with Delta Zeta and promoting accessible events, has there been any success moment that really stands out for you?
Yeah, actually being on campus, we do Hot Dogs for Hearing. We do a lot of philanthropy events to raise money for the Starkey Hearing Foundation. And we've had, myself being in the position I've had girls email me being like, I've heard so much about your organization and what you do for the Starkey Hearing Foundation and promoting accessibility at the university, teaching sign, and that has actually encouraged girls to want to rush Delta Zeta, the fact that we do all this philanthropy on campus and on a national level.
So what are the next steps going forward?
So it's only the beginning of the year. So right now, myself, I'm focusing on the recruitment events. We have one coming up on Wednesday and another one on Thursday. They're flip-flop events. So we're having like a luau on the first and the toga night on the second. And we are going to start having our philanthropy events as well in September. We have Turtle Dodge coming up, also raising money for the Starkey Hearing Foundation, and Hot Dogs for Hearing as well.
So how does the Hearing Foundation respond to your work? How do they feel knowing that you're...
We actually recently won a philanthropy award at the Nora Mensch Conference that I attended over the summer. Our chapter specifically, out of the 160 Delta Zetas there are, we won the most service hours per member. So our chapter specifically had the highest amount of volunteer hours, which per member, of course. We only have about 50 girls on average, compared to some of the state's chapters where they might have 200 per chapter. But we do a lot here, and we have a lot of passionate girls in Delta Zeta that want to give back to the community, that want to help out philanthropic events. And you know, and it doesn't have to be just our philanthropy specifically. We have girls that help out with the OSPCA and different volunteer programs on campus.
So if you could send any one message about the need for equality, accessibility to be promoted among the student base, what might you say about that?
Honestly, everybody's different. Us as a sorority, we really promote like diversity. We want you to feel comfortable and provide that accessibility at our events. And we really strive to do that. And honestly, if you wanted to get in contact with me, if anything we could do to make it more better experience, what we can do to improve, you can contact me at dzmelanierenault@gmail.com. You can also message me about our recruitment events, anything Delta Zeta related, I will answer.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My friends, Delta Zeta has exactly the right idea. For the truth is, disability organizations need partnerships. They need support within the communities. And who better than the leaders of tomorrow? The young generation, those who have the new innovations, the new advances, those who can really provide a voice to the great works that these organizations are doing. The fact that they're making accessibility and equality a priority speaks extremely well, not only of the attitude of these young women, but also the true education they are receiving. For the fact is, it's 10% what you learn in a classroom, 90% what you learn from the world. For you see, you can't truly embrace equality or accessibility unless you've lived it, unless you've been a part of it. Everyone, somewhere, somehow, has been affected by a disability. It's occurred in every family. Statistically, that's just how it works. But it's a question of recognition. Do we look upon this as cousin so-and-so we visit once in a while out of a sense of obligation? Or do we see it as a person, strong, capable, intelligent, with a story to share? It's a decision each of us must make for ourselves. And yeah, there are many in society who wouldn't be as comfortable looking upon certain types of disabilities. But representatives of Delta Zeta have talked about everything from Accessibility Awareness Day to mental health issues, and now about the Hearing Foundation. And really, that shows a great sense of diversity in their ranks. They have people coming in with different perspectives, different ambitions to create things of accessibility, of true access and equality. And that's where it begins. If you learn it in an academic institution, you're going to carry it forward into a workforce, and yeah, maybe, if you're really, really good at what you do, Maybe you'll even inspire someone. Maybe you'll even say that we can create this, or we can let this person in. We can find a way to adapt and to reach them. And why in the world would we not do this? It's only limiting ourselves to say, we have this, that, and the other, and it's good for us. But what about our fellow students, our co-workers, our family, our friends? Are we going to create the impossible standard to say, we can accept you because you're this and that? Or, nope, can't let you in because you have this one little difference. Or are we going to work with these people to come to understand what disability really means? So you communicate a little differently. Sign language is no less of a language. In fact, there are many places that acknowledge that as a second language credential. It's something you can go and study. You can say, without any falsehood or any word of a doubt, that learning sign language is learning another way of communicating. And our world is basically built on communication, folks. For if we can't reach out to one another, then whatever we do holds no meaning. And reaching out to a person with a disability is no different than reaching out to somebody who happens to hear the words being said. The communication is not lost. It is just different. It is not less or more. It is simply another interpretation. Some people speak English, some people speak Spanish, some people speak sign language. There is no difference. It is just a matter of reaching out to another. Some of those words should reflect, by their very existence, that by speaking to a person who is deaf or hard of hearing, that you value their right to communication. It might not be an overt statement, but if you take the time to learn how to reach them, it says something about you, and it says something about their right to access. And our society is built by people who will not stand for inequality. History has shown us this a million times over. And if we can't bring ourselves to learn another's way of communicating, another's way of thinking, that is an injustice, and it cannot stand. Truth is, it's a challenge learning to communicate with anyone. It's a challenge we start at a very young age, in fact. But with time, with effort, we grow into the role. And the more it becomes just our nature. So I think partnering with a hearing organization is really an amazing step. And being so devoted to this, it's just saying, you're in a different place than we are, but you matter. Your work matters, and we want to share in it. And nothing could speak better of a generation of young people than this, I think. Not just having those ideals on paper, but making them actually translate into actions, into words, into hope. And if we can do this, that is where equality truly begins. And I, for one, am grateful to see that these things have not fallen by the wayside. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.